Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. Today, I want to talk about Layman Pang. I've never introduced you to Layman Pang before. Some of you may know about him. Layman Pang and his family, I should say. I do like in these talks and also at retreats to kind of to give you an idea of the Buddhist pantheon, you know, the folks to look up to and, I don't know, derive some, hopefully some inspiration from. I have been doing my best recently to find different sorts of people, not just men, but also women. And this features some women in this in the story of the Pang family. It's the most famous lay family in Buddhist history, without question. And the whole Buddhist canon. It's Vimalakirti, of course, but he was just a single guy, or he wasn't a single guy, he had a family, but the story was only about him, and he was, you know, very mythological. The Pang family almost certainly existed. Of all the great collections of the great masters in the Golden Age of Zen from 700 to 900, this is the only record of lay people. As you know, for the, probably most of you would know that the history of Zen is largely a male and monastic endeavor for 1,500 years, until the last 50 years, really, in which, with some exceptions, but for the last 50 years, of course, we have lay practitioners and women in the fore here in the West. The Pang family, though, for a long time stood as the model for practitioners, for lay practitioners, that yes, you too can become an advanced practitioner. So he appears to have been born around 740 in southern China. He was became a successful merchant and a husband and father, and at some point, according to the record, he became concerned about the nature of the human condition and sought to understand the reality of it. Now, he had a comfortable life, but something drew him to find something deeper, to find the meaning of existence. And as happened to all of you, I think, to draw you out of your homes come and practice. But he did not want to leave his family. Instead, he famously loaded all of his possessions and the family's possessions on a boat. He was well-to-do. Pushed it out to the middle of a very deep lake and scuttled the boat. And according to one source, he thought about giving them away, his things, to others, but figured that they'd just end up making those people deluded and unhappy as well. So he decided to get rid of them all. I hope he checked with his wife and his family about that. But he may have. I say that because it appears that they were also along for the ride. They then went to stay with Laywoman Pang's sister, it looks like, for a while, and then Layman Pang then went to study for 3 years at a monastery, looks like, and but they traveled around and made baskets, sold, which they sold by the side of the road. Lay woman Pang in particular and their daughter Ling Chao were very serious about practice. And they were portrayed, both of them, as accomplished practitioners, often besting other teachers and monks. The Pang also had a son, and he just disappears. Just doesn't get mentioned, in the record. Pang studied with the two great masters of his day, Shi Tu, who was a kind of hermit. His name means rock head, I think. He lived on the top of a rock in a grass hut. And then the other great master of the day, Ma Tzu, who really kicked off, I think it's fair to say, the golden age of Zen. Lingmen Pang today is most famous for this phrase that I bet you've heard, chop wood, carry water. That's from Lingmen Pang. I'll read the verse, actually. It doesn't say chop wood, carry water. That evolved into that because I think it sounds so good. And chopping wood is such a satisfying activity. Here it is. He's actually discussing with Shi Tu. Oh, I'll read the whole thing. Said to the layman, since seeing me, what have your daily activities been? He asked Layman Pang. Layman replies, well, if you're asking me what I do every day, there's nothing to say about it. Well, okay, Shi Tu says. What did you think you were doing before I asked you about it? And the layman offers this verse. My daily activities are not unusual. I'm just naturally in harmony with them. Grasping nothing, discarding nothing. In every place, there's no hindrance, no conflict. Who assigns the ranks of vermilion and purple? Those were the high-class colors. The hills and mountains' last speck of dust is extinguished. My supernatural power and marvelous activity? Drawing water and carrying firewood. That was his magical activity. His supernatural power were the fact that he could fully do his daily activities. I think it takes a kind of, well, Zen practice has the possibility to reorder our values in a way. And to, in such a way that we value our everyday activities, that's where our greatest hidden power appears. That we can just chop wood and carry water. That we can just attend to somebody who's suffering. That we can just listen to a friend. That we can just play Monopoly with our son or daughter. And have that be all there is to do. That's a miraculous activity. By the way, there are so many echoes. I'd read this and a couple of other things from Lingmen Pang. Now I've studied him a bit because I gave some talks in Norway about him and the family. I hadn't realized how many echoes there are between him and Rinzai 50 years later. So Rinzai uses that exact same phrase, miraculous, supernatural power. He says, you all are so interested in the supernatural power of the Buddha. Shall I tell you what the supernatural power of the Buddha is? He says, it's seeing without being deluded by sight. It's hearing without being deluded by sound. That's the supernatural activity. So our practice is the supernatural activity that we're after. The record of Lingmen Pang, has a lot of, which I have right here, and this magical thing, has a lot of interactions with, he has a lot of interactions with monks and masters. He loved arguing with them and playing around with them. Often he makes them look kind of foolish for being stiff or too insular. So I thought I'd read you a couple of them here, just to give you a flavor. This one's called Reading the Sutras. When the layman was lying down on the meditation platform reading sutras, a monk saw him and said, "Doesn't the layman know that he should maintain proper posture when reading the sutras?" The layman propped up one leg. The monk said nothing. I like that one. Here's another one. One day the layman arrived at Sichuan. While Sichuan was meditating in his room, the layman said, "If you simply stay in your room absorbed in meditation, how can you know when a monk has come to see you?" Sichuan uncrossed one leg. The layman turned to leave, but after taking a few steps, he turned back. Sichuan then recrossed his leg. The layman said, "Do you call this freely being yourself?" Sichuan said, "I'm being the host." The layman said, "The elder teacher not only knows how to be the elder teacher only knows how to be the host. He doesn't know how to be the guest." Sichuan then called to his attendant to bring some tea, and the layman did a little dance and left. Layman does a lot of little dancing at the end. This one is another one that I like. You know, it's talking to this monk who's meditating, and his idea of greeting him is uncrossing one leg. He's stuck, you know, this monk, this and this other master, in the vertical world, the world of Zazen, the spiritual world, and can't just freely come and go between that world and the human world, of, "Hey, how you doing?" That's something that's so important to me that we learn how to do, that we don't get stuck in this cool, quiet world, but that we go back and forth between the two, that we learn how to do that without hesitation. So, I think Raymond Pang says, you know, you don't know how to dance between those two in this story. Okay, well now I'll get to two from the family. Here's one. These are all, I'm giving you the least odd of the stories. They're all kind of, sometimes these old Chinese stories can be strange. One day, Laywoman Pang went into the Deer Gate Temple and made an offering of food. The temple priest asked her on whose behalf she was making the offering, so he could dedicate its merit. She took a comb and stuck it in the back of her hair. "Dedication of merit is complete," she said, and walked out. I really like that one. Merit, you know, the old system was that you got merit by doing good things, exactly, and you could dedicate that merit to somebody else. And the monk would write up who that person was and put it on a board, and then the dedication of merit has been done, had been transferred. So it's kind of a transfer system. And in many places, you know, my mother went to Thailand and was really shocked at how much there was of that still going, you know, still happening, to be sure, merit. And when we sing the solo chant, the original of that actually is, we dedicate the chant, not that we dedicate the chanting of the Heart Sutra, we dedicate the merit of the chanting of the Heart Sutra to, but I just, because Bodhidharma gave me permission, I cut out the merit. So here she says, I don't need your merit. You know, and that was it's particularly relevant because she's a lay person. So that's the way lay people get, you know, get advance to a better life, the next, to be reborn into a better life, is to collect merit by giving, and to the monks or monastery. And she's just says, I don't need that. I just wanted to give. You know, that's the feeling I have from it. I just wanted to give freely. I don't need something in return. So there, dedication of merit is complete. Okay, last story, and my favorite. So once, when the layman was on his way to sell his bamboo baskets, oh no, that's the wrong one. Here's the right one. The layman was sitting in his thatched cottage one day. Difficult, 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 he exclaimed. Like trying to scatter 10 measures of sesame seed all over a tree. Easy, 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 returned laywoman Pang. Just like touching your feet to the ground when you get out of bed. Neither difficult nor easy, said Ling Chao, the daughter. 100 grass tips on 100 grass tips, the ancestors' meaning. I'm sure they're talking about practice here, you know. And you can, Lemon Pang in the previous poem, you know, about drawing wood, and I mean drawing water and carrying wood, he sounded like he had it all worked out. Harmonious action. But here, difficult, difficult, difficult. Mm-hmm. Like trying to get sesame seed on every single leaf. And reminds me about, you know, of practice, trying to give up every thought, one after another, after another, after another. You know, sometimes it's just, or every desire, yep. One after another, after another. Then they keep coming. You know, we're little desire or thought factories, mm-hmm. our minds, and trying to get one after another, after another, after another. Sometimes practice is like that. Many times it is. And then laywoman Pang's retort, it's easy. You know, just get out of bed, put your feet on the floor. Sometimes it's like that too. Sometimes you just get quiet. All of a sudden, out of the clear blue sky, it appears. Drops into your lap. And then, and if you ask me, practice really is a mix of these two things. It always will be. It always will be difficult, 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 and at other times it will be easy, easy, easy. And we have to go through both of those in order to get to what Ling Chao says. She's got the last word, which is, she points, I think, to the result of all that difficult and easy and difficult and easy, which is neither difficult nor easy. That is to say, beyond difficult and easy. That special state that is beyond duality, that is beyond this or that, good or bad, hard or easy. And there is that place, and knowing that place. I mean, in that place, there is, I think, there is true ease. In that place, our affairs have been completely settled. And the moment is just as it is. That's the Buddha's world. And I think in that place then, you know, the meaning of the ancestors is everywhere. Everywhere you look, as the Buddha said when he got up from the Bodhi tree, everything is enlightened. They just don't see it. Everything is perfect. Every tip of grass. I want to suggest that world is a very helpful world to know, to get to know, and to know as part of ourselves, as an aspect of ourselves, that world that's beyond good and evil, that's beyond good and bad, or hard and easy, or all of our dualities. Because it's there that it's by finding that place that we get beyond our own worries and hopes, our own perspective. We can really drop that, really, truly, deeply rest, and come back to the world of opposites, fresh. And I think really listen to somebody else, really be with somebody, do that miraculous activity. And I think by doing that over and over again, I really do believe that we have a chance to react a little more directly, a little more openly, a little more creatively to the people around us and to the situations we encounter. And we can do it. We can do that practice, because layman Pang, we're all lay people. The Pang family showed us the way. I look forward to this new age of Zen, which has really opened up to all sorts of people, including us.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.